Breakfast puppies?
We're all set to begin, so let's dive right in to Bikers, Dice, and Bars. Talking bicycles and motorbikes, gamer things and all the like. You can listen to it in your cars, but mostly it's about dive bars. Bikers, Dice, and Bars.
Hey, Xander, what are we drinking tonight?
Well, if the ocean was whiskey and I was a duck, well, I'd swim to the bottom and never come up. Rye whiskey, rye whiskey, rye whiskey, I cry. If I don't get rye whiskey, I surely will die.
So I'm assuming we're drinking rye whiskey?
Oh, no. Oh, no, we are. We are. We are. We totally are. We have a bunch of extra rye whiskey from Wagon Con, so we are drinking...
Wagon Con!
We are currently drinking Crater Lake Straight American Rye Whiskey, which... So, for those of you who don't know, in order to be considered a rye whiskey, you must be made with at least 51% rye in your mash. Crater Lake Rye Whiskey, however, is made with 100% rye whiskey.
Okay, so tell me a little bit more about what that means.
So when you create a mash build for your whiskey, in order to hit certain categories, like if you want to be considered an American bourbon.
Oh, hold on. Let's step back even a little further.
Yeah.
For the uninitiated, What is a mash?
A mash is a combination of the grains in which you are going to go and ferment to distill to make a spirit.
All right. And you mix these grains based on rye?
If you want a rye whiskey, you have to have it at least 51% rye. If you want a bourbon, your mash build has to be at least 51% corn. There's some other requirements as well to be considered a bourbon, but...
Fascinating.
But, so anyways, you can make a rye whiskey and only have it be 51% rye, which would be pretty mild, and I don't know why you would do that, but you can.
There's a lot of it, you know. We're looking at you, Monarch.
So to me, the better of the rye whiskeys are made with like a 90% plus mash bill of rye. This one is 100%. This is an Oregon rye whiskey, and it is aged 2 years as well. So again, I'm finding this to be quite delicious. Comes in at your standard 80 proof and is distilled in the great state of Oregon.
Speaking of things that are distilled in the great state of Oregon, you are listening to Bikers, Dice, and Bars. Recorded here in Portland, Oregon, as usual, I am NPC.
I'm just Jacob.
And Dr. Xander Gerrymander.
And this is our 26th episode. We just had a really lengthy break while we moved our studio. We're still kind of putting it together, but it's already looking and sounding a lot more wholesome than our former studio. We just got back from Wagon Con in the Dalles, and we have a lot to talk about.
Wagon Con!
Yeah, this is the first time we managed to get Xander out there, so we'll hear more about what Xander thought about it later on in the show, but this is some pretty good whiskey. Because I like to follow the advice that we give. I've almost entirely been drinking Irish whiskey ever since that day last year, where Matt Buckley from Wagon Con introduced us to a lot of wonderful things. This is actually, I think, the first time I've had not Irish whiskey since that day.
Really?
Yeah.
Interesting. Because I don't like to discriminate. unless it's Canadian whiskey, in which case.
Not so much a discrimination as simply I've been on a roll. You know, on a kick.
Yes.
No, that's fair.
I take it back. I have had a couple Manhattans, which reminds me, this is probably good for a Manhattan.
Oh, absolutely.
Yes. Absolutely.
Yeah. Absolutely. This would make a good Manhattan. I personally like my Manhattans made out of rye whiskey over bourbon for the most part.
Now, we have another bottle sitting here on the table, which is what?
This is Ezra Brooks straight rye whiskey as well. Also aged 2 years in new charred American oak barrels. This comes in at 90 proof, and this is from Kentucky instead of Oregon. So we're going to go and break into this a little bit later.
Now, when you say straight, does that mean it is also 100% rye?
No, straight denotes, I believe, that it has been aged at least 2 years, I believe, correct, is what that means.
I think you're right on that, and I think it means 2 years, and you can only have corn as the rest of the mash build.
Fascinating. We'll look that up later.
We will
verify.
I've been reading a lot of whiskey books lately.
You. I would trust you over me, but I think there's that weird add-on requirement.
I think the straight means at least 2 years aged.
But hey, before we get a little too trashed, let's hit the road.
So, as some of you in the great city of Portland might know, it is June coming fast and furious to us here, which means it is time for Pedalpalooza.
Wait, it's June already? That was too fast.
I said June's coming up.
Oh.
We're still, Jesus,
take a breath, son.
We're still in the early maze.
I've been gone for too long from work. I wonder if I still have a job.
Where am I and why am I here? Mm-hmm. And more about Admiral Stockdale.
What year is it?
As long as they have not FedExed you a box of all of your desk stuff, you're usually okay.
You know, that's a good prank you should pull on someone one day when they go on a break. Like if someone goes out for an extended leave or a sabbatical, put all their stuff in a box and FedEx it to them.
Yeah. Yeah.
Ooh, tempting.
That'd cause a mental breakdown there.
But anyways, Pedalpalooza is coming up in, by the time you hear this, 2 weeks?
About that?
Yeah, about 2 weeks.
Middle of
when
May?
You hear this, yeah. So we're going to be launching this episode in the middle of May, and the 1st of June is the start of a month-long bike extravaganza. So starting on June 1st, we have here in the City of Roses, Pedalpalooza, which will be a whole month full of nothing but bicycle-oriented events. The nice thing about Pedalpalooza, for those of you who don't know, is that you can basically do whatever the fuck you want. If you just want to host a ride based on whatever you like, you can just do that. There is a website called shift2bikes.org, I believe it is, and you can just go and post whatever ride you want to have. You can say whether or not it's 21 and over. You can say whether or not it's all ages, if it's family friendly. And again, quite literally, you can make any ride you want. There's been things like the annual redhead ride where just a bunch of gingers show up and people who want to dye their hair red.
So if I were to paint my scalp red,
sure.
Could I go?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
It'd be funny.
Yeah.
It'd be funny.
Going to do it.
You should. So I have gone through.
I'm not going to do it.
No. Now, have either of you participated in any Pedalpalooza rides ever?
Yes.
Never, not once.
Okay. Jacob. What's your experience with Pedalpalooza?
Well, other than being annoyed by it, I had, for my period of time in Portland, I've lived close to many of the common staging points for it.
Okay.
And for some of the big events. And so there was a certain amount of that. But a couple of years, the co-ops in town got together and did the co-op ride. And because I was at the time serving on the
board. Did you co-op it?
Technically, yes, because I was serving on the board of one of the co-ops in town. So I was on the route with them. I've gone on a couple bar crawls associated with Pedalpalooza.
Sure.
And then the year after I had to switch over to a recumbent.
Mm-hmm.
Out of solidarity with a couple other people I had met at the bike shop who also were having to switch over to recumbents due to accidents or disease, there was a ride that year that I don't even think made shift to that was all for current and newly recumbent folk who were doing it because of injury or disease. And we did things like what was called the Hawthorne Hill Press.
Oof.
Because when you're riding a recumbent, like I've said before, you're basically doing a leg press all the way uphill. So when you're going up Hawthorne 221st, it's one of the more brutal hills in town.
Sure.
So.
I've got this mental picture of one of those fighting games where somebody does that flying bicycle kick. But I'm now angle it 45 degrees upward. And I think it's Mortal Kombat.
Yes.
I want to say Liu Kang does
yes.
that. Wah, 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 wah. I'm just picturing that one of those infinite gifts that just keeps going and going. And you apply different
hill.
Backgrounds. Like suddenly he's in space and then he's on Mars and mm-hmm. then he's in Hyrule. And yeah.
As someone who rides a high wheeler recumbent. Yep. That's what it looks like.
I've been doing Pedalpalooza rides for about 6 or 7 years now as an avid cyclist, and I even had one of my own for a little bit. I might try to bring it back this year. We'll see. Tune in next week for more on that. But I personally like Pedalpalooza for the most part, just because it is a way for the cyclist community to kind of come around different things that also don't have to deal with cycling. And to give you an idea of that, I went and I wrote down some of my favorite rides that are happening this year. So on June 9th at 5 p.m., there's the ride-through drive-through ride, in which apparently Multnomah County code here says that if a fast food joint or a place that has a drive-through window is only open to drive-through, they have to, by law, also accommodate pedestrians and cyclists to also order through them and not just cars. And so I assume that this ride on June 9th at 5 p.m. that is starting at Irving Park is all about going and crashing fast food restaurants and going through drive-thrus, which kind of sounds awesome to me, actually.
Wow.
So if you want a junkie ride to justify your bike riding to eat fast food, I guess that'd be a good one. To give you another idea of one, June 10th, Nate's Pinball Ride.
Oh.
5:45 p.m. at Wedgehead, which is one of the best pinball bars in town. He apparently has 5 different stops highlighting pinball bars. So basically, this is just an entire ride in which you bike around, play pinball, bike to another pinball bar, play more pinball, etc. So just kind of give you an idea of what's going on. And then we have back-to-back cosplay rides on June 15th. 3 p.m. at Clinton Park is the gamer ride.
Yes.
In which you are encouraged to dress as your favorite video game character, followed by 6:30 p.m. at OMSI is the fantasy cosplay ride. And considering that it's starting at OMSI, I would imagine this is probably going to be a pretty major event. So, again, if you are interested in such a thing, dress your best on your bike as you want and go for it.
Okay. We need to do cosplay as villains someday. Whether we are writing or not, we need to do villains cosplay. Because Xander, you are either, in my book, Snidely Whiplash, but preferably, you're the Purple Pie Man.
I know. You've wanted me to do this for so long. I have wanted you to do a Purple
Pie Man costume for since I met you, actually. this was before you even grew your crazy mustache out. I was gonna say, because I didn't have that when I met you.
I'm just gonna say, NPC, I'm right there with you.
I've got pictures, by the way. If you send me bribes, I'll show you baby Xander. But
wow,
for me, I would do Ming the Merciless, because that's what I was wearing when I was wet when I had my wedding this past.
So good.
Yeah.
Halloween. Stupid good.
So will this be a long-term plan so you can grow the beard back out?
Yeah, I'll have to. Oh, yeah. It'll be a long-term plan. Let's aim for 2020. Now, Jacob, what villain would you be?
I don't know. I'm a kindly man. I'm not very villainous.
Bullshit.
Bullshit. How about just Captain Annoyed at Everything?
I'm a big fan of making your own villains and heroes. That's why I really appreciated Alter Ego Society's hero-villain pub crawl they did for such a long time. I actually got Alex to go to one of those, Alex Perez.
That'd be rad. Yeah. I'd love to get him out there to go with us, too. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Just a few more rides I want to highlight. Again, speaking of bicycle things, June 18th is the Bike in Movie event at Lad's Circle at 7 p.m., in which they're showing Pee-wee's Big Adventure. It's all about.
So do they just set up a screen in the middle of the circle?
Yeah.
Yeah.
In the circle, like, full of bushes and stuff?
I know. I don't know how it's going to work. I'm so curious to find out.
I attended the Lads 500 one year, and that was amusing.
Just riding in circles for 500 times?
A whole lot, mostly tall bikes, riding in circles.
Yikes.
Yeah.
June 22nd, the Bowie versus Prince ride returns, even though I was told they were never going to do that ever again after Bowie and Prince had died. So, you know,
I got feelings on that one.
I got feelings on this one too. It's strongly in the disapprove section, but
yes.
Why do you disapprove?
Because they said that, you know, the whole thing was a fun Bowie versus Prince rivalry thing that they all really enjoyed, and people would dress in costumes about the both. And then when they both died in the same year, they thought, well, I think this should just be the end of it out of respect. And then, well, a year later, it's back, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah.
I feel like people should go and abide by their convictions. Anyways, if you're interested in that, 7 p.m. at Pioneer Square is when that one starts off. And I've gone to a number of these, including the one that was supposed to be the last one. They are fun events.
Mm-hmm.
They are fun, so it might be good. Also, too, every Friday in June, there is the Breakfast on the Bridge at 7 a.m.
Oh, God. Okay.
So if you like to commute, don't take the following bridges.
All of them.
All of them.
The Steel Bridge, the Hawthorne Bridge, and you couldn't take the Tillicum Bridge anyways. But
Wait. Why couldn't you take
the... Because you can't drive on the Tillicum Bridge.
Okay, but what if you commute by bicycle?
Then you can.
Well, then you can, but it's also going to be a giant breakfast place.
Okay.
So if you want free breakfast,
yeah,
every Friday at 7 a.m. until 9 a.m., the Steel Bridge, the Hawthorne Bridge, and the Tillicum Bridge is your destination.
So I need some of y'all to go to that.
I've never gone to one. I might try this time around just to do some field reporting.
Because we need some breakfast puppies at the breakfast bridge.
Oh, yeah.
All right.
Fine. Done. We'll spread out.
Oh, wait. By then, I won't have to go over the bridges to go to work.
Yeah, you'll be fine.
Right on. Awesome. What date is that again?
Every Friday morning
June. Every Friday in June.
7 a.m. to 9 a.m.
Okay. All right.
And of course, last but not least, it would be remiss of us to not mention that on June 29th is the World Naked Bike Ride.
Which I know you are a big fan of Pedalpalooza, but you don't like that particular event. Tell us why, Xander.
Preach it, brother. Preach it.
Let me count the ways as my whiskey glass is empty. So,
do you need me to fill that for you?
Yeah, if you want to fill this for me while I continue to go and rant against this thing. So,
real quick, which whiskey are you choosing for your refill? Are you sticking with the Crater? Or are you going with the Ezra?
No, he's pouring me Crater, so I'm just going to go with it. I'm not going to judge him right now because... Because the good doctor's going to get up on his soapbox real quick here.
Uh-oh.
A man needs an appropriate cure for his pain.
And that cure is more whiskey. So, number of things that I don't like about the World Naked Bike Ride. Okay, but I have to preface this with saying, I respect your right to bike naked. If that's what you want to do, cool, good on you. However, I don't
want to. And go ahead and get your hate mail letters ready to DXG at breakfastpuppies.com.
Yep.
Feel free to CC JJ on that.
And that's fine. So again, I respect your right to do that. I don't care. It's cool. If that's what you want to do, that's fine. However, it is my right to not want to see it. It is my right to not want to be around it. It is my right to think that you bicycling naked on asphalt and in mass and probably mostly inebriated, because I've seen you, is a bad idea for your health and everyone's health around them when you go and inevitably crash and burn. I just don't like looking at naked people in public. I just don't. That's a me thing. That's fine. That's a me thing, and I will acknowledge that. I also have tried my best to avoid it every single year. And inevitably, no matter where I am, I forget to look up where it's happening. I just like cross the street and all of a sudden there's like 15,000 naked cyclists in front of me. I have to wait and sit there for a half hour going, oh God, I can't go anywhere else. My destination is across the street, you bastard. So there's also that as well.
If I remember correctly, Dr. Xander Gerrymander.
Yes, sir.
Way back in like our first, second, or third episode, I think, when we started talking about helmets, you were pro freedom. Yes?
Again, I have said they have every right to be stupid in doing this.
Okay, so same with helmets then.
Absolutely.
You have every right to be stupid. Okay, mm-hmm. Great. Just making sure we're remaining consistent here.
Yeah, I mean, again.
Because freedom isn't always smart.
Mm-hmm. No, it's not.
You know?
No, it is absolutely not always smart. However, I do believe it is your right. And so I go and I basically go and I ride my helmet probably about 95% of the time. The exceptions of that are coming up in June. If any of you listeners want to go and ride with me and watch the Women's World Cup,
ooh.
As I wear a tri-corner hat and blast patriotic music from the back of my bicycle to watch every single World Cup game.
I like naked people.
I mean, like, my only problem with the naked bike ride is it comes down to two issues, route and the fact they don't allow for pacing.
What do you mean by pacing?
They don't pulse them. This is not like a marathon where it's a straight line route, where they set up the route for diversions. It's set at a horseshoe pattern usually that almost could be designed for maximum disruption throughout Portland. And
they've gotten some criticism for that in the past as well. And their idea is basically, we just want us to be seen while being obscene.
Which I don't think
it's obscene.
I don't know. I don't care. I mean, like, I'm all in favor of the visibility. I think you and I are about 180 degrees on dealing with people's naked bodies.
Probably.
But for me, it's the fact that they don't pulse them.
It's a mob.
It's just this continuous mob that lasts for up to 3 hours, sometimes longer. And
it's slated for 3 hours because 11 p.m. is the after party.
And because of that period, you end up with huge, huge, huge traffic snarls because they, in certain intersections, they don't have cop control allowing pattern filtering and pauses in the cyclists for necessary traffic to get through.
I also think, too, when you are that obvious of a bike group mob thing, and I think that when your goal is to basically kind of cause disruption, I don't think that you do the bicycle community as a whole any good by annoying motorists even more. That is my thought about that in a nutshell.
I don't believe that the ride is created with the intentions of causing disruption. The ride itself is intended to raise awareness through a momentary here in your face setup. However, there are a significant number of people and really hardcore bicycle mavens who are all about the disruption that it causes, and thus they push that aspect of it. But also the fact that it's so huge and the fact that those people run it means that level of pacing, the dispersion between different groups of it doesn't happen. They love the fact that, oh, now we have 6,000 people going through one light at the same time.
15,000 people.
When they start flipping off car riders, I don't appreciate that. But it's not enough for me to hate the ride. Mm-hmm. I just, again, like certain events that we've been to in recent days, I'm just not fond of the way it's organized.
Sure. Right. Because the World Naked Bike Ride has a overarching philosophy, much like other world events, such as the Distinguished Gentleman Ride, which is a worldwide motorcycle ride to raise awareness and funds for prostate cancer.
Sure. Good cause.
When it gets localized, sometimes weird things happen. And here in Portland, a lot of the folks who were involved with the critical mass movement and other such, bicycle advocacy, bicycle activist, bicycle, they've gotten to the point of calling themselves revolutionaries, go to the point of focusing on the disruption element. And I have no problem with them riding naked. I have no problem with them given a contiguous route. I think there are routes in Portland that they could be given that would be minimally disruptive, and they could have no more than 3 stops at major intersections for set amounts of time. It's the weird horseshoe shape that almost always impacts 39th slash Cesar Chavez, and always hits at least one, sometimes two, sometimes I think 1 year, 3 bridges. Was there 1 year, 3 bridges when Tillicum opened? I don't remember. Quote me on that.
They kept changing their routes just based upon the fact that there were so many complaints about the disruption that they were causing.
Right. It's because they do a horseshoe shape. Yeah, it's the horseshoe. It's the there and back again.
Well, let's close this segment out here with some final words on Pedalpalooza. And if any of our listeners want to get involved or possibly contribute to the local Pedalpalooza, the local biking community, Xander, what should they do?
I would go to shift2bikes.org. That is shift2bikes.org. That is where all of the Pedalpalooza events are posted in the month of June. Also, there are monthly events outside of June as well. June just happens to be the big month. So if you want to go and host your own ride, if you want to see what rides are being hosted, if you want to see if I bring back my semi-annual, fourth annual Tom Waits Broken Bicycles ride, you can also go and check there, because I might bring it back this year, because The Dead Don't Die is coming out, and I might try to organize a ride around the premiere of that movie. So stay tuned to next episode, in which I will tell you if that is happening or not.
And beyond all that, I'm looking at potentially doing a ride or two this year. Xander will probably be involved in a ride, even if he's not hosting one. You know, watch our social media. You know, you can find us on Facebook. You can find us both as a podcast and as individuals on all the social medias, Instagram, Twitter, Facebook. Look for us, and, you know, we'll post if we're going to be someplace, and come find us, say hi, and maybe buy us a drink.
Wagon Con!
Wagon Con!
Wagon Con! Wagon Con! Demon in the gorge! So we just got back from a convention.
Oh, yeah, we did.
We had a fantastic time. This was Wagon Con, the fourth year in the Dalles, Oregon.
Didn't they have like a cool tagline for it this year?
Now with 100% more wagons.
They had that previously. I think this year was Wagon Con, the search for spoke.
Yes.
Oh, okay. Yeah. That's right.
Yeah, so if you've been listening to this show, you have heard us talk about Wagon Con. It is our favorite convention. Well, it is my favorite convention, and I assume that it's probably a favorite of at least some other people at this table, maybe people who listen, who knows. It takes place in the Dalles, Oregon, in the first weekend in May. This was their fourth year, and we got all of the Bikers, Dice, and Bars crew, at least, to head down there and get some good gaming in and good drinking.
Get some wagons on.
We got our wagons on.
We got some our wagons on at Wagon Con.
So, all right, guys. Tell me, what were your experiences at the con this year?
Well, I really enjoyed fording the Dalles for the first time in real life.
And by fording the Dalles, you mean crossing second?
Well, yeah. That's how you do it these days.
To be honest, I think fording the Dalles would have been if you actually had to walk all the way from the bus station to the hotel.
That's true.
The desolate zone of the Dalles, Oregon.
This, dear listener, if you are of a generation between X, millennial, or Y, and they're anywhere there in between, you probably get that reference from the Oregon Trail video game. I am surprised sometimes when I talk to people who haven't played it.
I am too. And speaking of Oregon-based video games, hold on.
You're talking about the fishing game.
Odell Lake. You guys are.
We've talked about Odell Lake.
We talked about this.
You and I both have experience with
Odell Lake. I just assumed was a random name for a random lake in some make-believe world in which fish existed. And it wasn't until I moved to Oregon where I realized, oh, much like the Dalles, which is a real place on Earth, so is Odell Lake in the great state of Oregon.
So I want to make a note here that there is also the Oregon Trail video game has been the source of nostalgia for many people in their 30s through 50s over the last few decades, to the point that nostalgia is now coming back and becoming products inspired by or based on the Oregon Trail. And recently,
you have died.
Oh, yeah. Well, oh, yeah. Recently I acquired the Oregon Trail board game, which is really a card game, which I must say, it's not good.
It's not good.
Basically, there's no choice in the game whatsoever.
Yep.
It's the whole strategy.
It's just simply randomized.
Yep. That's it. Draw a card. Your success in the game is predetermined by the time when the cards are shuffled, much like Candyland. So, sorry, we just lost potential sponsorship from the creator of that game. But, dear listener, I do not advise getting the Oregon Trail card game.
Not good. Unlike Wagon Con.
Your game is bad and you should feel bad about it.
Yeah, unlike Wagon Con.
Unless you come over here and have a drink with us, and then we love you.
And you can explain your design choices and you might have rationale that will
sway us. But, yes, unlike Wagon Con.
Unlike Wagon Con.
So, As we mentioned prior,
so let's run this down. How many years have you been going to WagonCon, NPC?
So this is WagonCon number 4, and I've been going for 3 years. I did not hear about it, despite knowing all of the directors of it. I did not hear about it until its weekend of existence. For some reason, I never got an email, or maybe I did, and I'm just really bad at emailing. But in 2016, which was their first year, I didn't know it existed until the weekend it was happening. So I'm glad I went afterward, though.
So this is my second year. Again, NPC, thank you for introducing this to me. I appreciated it. I enjoyed it again. But I believe, Xander, you are a WagonCon virgin?
Well, not anymore. I've already had my dip in the dowels, if you know what I mean.
What do you mean? What?
My first time going to WagonCon.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Yeah. I missed it last year because I was going through a bunch of things, but...
life happens, bro.
Life happens. But this year, I was lucky enough to go through, and boy howdy, did I have a fun time at the WagonCon.
How fun was it?
It was so fun that I will go again next year.
Here's the question. Was it so fun that you've already requested time off work for next year?
I don't know who my bar manager is going to be next year, so I'd like to go and give at least 3 or 4 months like ahead.
Fair enough.
Notification.
As the Dr. Gerrymander here was explaining before you arrived, he has very, very, very rarely asks for specific days off from work. And I think you said that the next one is the 4th of July when we celebrate America Day in Breakfast Puppies fashion.
Yes.
I request only 2 days off a year, and that is traditionally Halloween and the 4th of July. And so for my request off to my bar manager, I said I'd need the 4th of July off because America. And that's
Halloween.
All I wrote.
Halloween? I didn't know you were a Halloween fan.
That's the joke.
His former online screen name was Halloween.
Yeah, back...
Lucky bastard.
Back in the original days of LiveJournal.
Oh, my God.
My LiveJournal screen name is Halloween, and still is. I still own that.
Well, anyway, WagonCon, which does not happen in Halloween, just happened this past weekend. We headed down as a group to the Dalles. We stayed at the Dalles Inn. You know, there was some... I think they've undergone a change of management, so it was a slightly... I stay there every year, and, you know, we go there multiple times a year because we're members of the wine club. But this year was straight, like, the staff just seemed a little off. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, our
keys stopped working all the time.
Both Xander and I's keys quit working all the time. And since it was two different keys, you know, he was carrying it. For those of you who don't know, the good doctor tends to wander around in beautiful vests and waistcoats, and his card was never near any sort of electronic device. So unlike my poor ass, that could have been the fault of you had no excuse.
No.
So there was problems with our card keys, but the staff, while definitely not on their game, still had the warm, welcoming, want to be helpful thing that I've found at the Dells, and I appreciate that.
They got it solved.
I must note here, picking up on something you just said, the good Dr. Gerrymander here is the best man, the best looking, the best dressed man you will ever hear.
You will ever hear.
And so do you wear an undershirt?
Yes.
Okay, so picture this, dear listener. We actually have a picture of this, and I'll post it on our feed. The hottest day of the weekend.
Oh, yeah.
Dr. Gerrymander is walking around the Dalles in 4 layers, looking like the villain. The gun. He honestly.
Not just four layers.
No, he looked almost perfectly like Lee Van Cleef's character in The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly.
Yeah.
Like, he looks like the villain from a Western. Like, any moment he's about to elbow his coat back and have a little gun, a little holster right there next to his waistcoat ready to fire at you. So he's walking around in 4 fucking layers and a hat.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You actually took a picture of me so we can post it on the Breakfast Puppies Instagram page.
Yeah. So anyway, the Dalles and Wagon Con. Wagon Con, Jacob, as you asked prior, this is my third year at Wagon Con, and I've been a guest of honor at least two of those years because I go and I run a lot of games, including we actually had a main event that both of you helped me with, and we'll talk about in a second.
So, NPC, I have a question for you.
Yes?
How many cons have you gone to in your life?
That's a rough question, and, you know, that's a good one for me to think about, and maybe I'll bring out in our old studio,
I
had
More than 10?
Oh, yeah.
More than 20?
In my old studio, before we moved, I had a peg hanging near the door with all of my con badges to date, except for a handful that I lost in a move, and that might have been like anywhere from 6 to 12, but I've been going to cons since 1998. Mm. No, more than, oh, shit. Okay, the first con that I remember going to, like
30 or 40 is what you're saying,
MobiCon in 1998, Mobile, Alabama. And I think I've gone to at least one con every year since then.
So my question to you is that you have mentioned previously on this episode and others before that as well, that Wagon Con is your favorite con. Is this also the smallest con you've gone to?
No, not for me.
Possibly.
No. And more importantly, why is this your favorite convention?
Of
all of these scores of cons you've gone to over the past 30 years, why is this your favorite?
It is the energy of awesomeness in the air. Every con I go to has different people going for different reasons. Depending, some are gaming cons, some are multimedia cons, some are conventions that are actually trade shows in disguise.
Yep,
I'm looking at you, PAX. Some are some are just swap meets. Some you only go to go to the vendor's room. Wagon Con is the only con that I go to for the express purpose of human interaction. Human interaction on a, you know, you go to the grocery store, that's a human interaction. You go to the convenience store, that's a human interaction. You flip sure off the person is. In traffic, that's a human interaction. But the human interactions that I'm looking for at a convention are those that I want to, those interactions that I want to have. And I want them to be a two-way, transactional, positive experience. And when I go to Wagon Con, every interaction that I have with a person there is pleasant. Even if I'm buying something from one of the several vendors that they had this year.
All three of them?
I feel like...
I think there was actually... I mean,
there was like six or eight. There was a lot.
Really?
Yeah, there were three or four... Four on the one side.
Four on the one side.
And then four on the other side. Yeah.
The massage chair made up the fourth.
Yeah. Yeah. I think there were a total of eight vendors. Aaron will correct us at some point in the future, but I think there were eight vendors. Even the vendor interactions, I don't feel like I'm buying something.
Right.
No, I feel like I'm having a conversation with a cool person.
It felt very friendly.
Yeah. That's why I go to
genuinely friendly.
That's it right there. Mm-hmm. Genuinely friendly convention.
So I went and I bought a couple stickers from one of the vendors, had a bunch of cool artwork there. And she had
Do you remember which vendor it was?
I don't know her name, but she had drawn a bunch of really...
Was it Pachu?
Maybe. I think it was.
With the dice bags? And the little D20 stickers?
Oh,
and
yes,
stuff.
Yeah. Yes. Pachu! Yes. Yeah, so Pachu. She had gone and she had... made a bunch of cool stickers for all of the kind of classic, you know, D&D classes like the warlock, the rogue, the warrior, etc.
Really good.
And then she had a random one that was gunslinger.
I saw that and immediately thought of you, Xander, because of a game that we played a long time ago.
Yeah. Yeah. I love Iron Kingdoms. And so, so I went and I was like, this is great because it was a gun. It was a revolver pistol with gun smoke coming out of it, and it had a bunch of black roses. And I just went, not only is this me, this is also my girlfriend in a nutshell. And so I just bought two of them. And even just talking to her about it, she just went, yeah, this was a fan art thing that some guy asked me to make for him. And I thought, maybe I can just sell these as well and see if people like them. And they did. And so she kept making them. And just that beautiful interaction of just the whole story behind how this random gunslinger sticker came to be in her repertoire of classic D&D classes even happened. And that how she was so excited that I was so excited about having that sticker because it was a custom thing that she also decided to sell, which
was really rad.
And then she gave free stickers to me too.
Oh yeah, 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 yeah. You were so happy about both the gunslinger stickers. I mean, like,
free stickers.
I mean, you're often have a certain level of reserve and adult mean to you. You were like a kid in a candy store with those stickers.
They were so good. So the free sticker that she gave me, there was one that said that had a D20 that said, oh, crit.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Then one that had a D1 that said, oh crit.
Crit.
So, you know, NPC, you were talking about the fact that you've been probably to 30 or 40 cons, and you've definitely been to some of the conventions that were that are larger than the ones I've been. I've never been to any of the PAXs. I've never been to Gen Con.
No Dragon Cons.
I was fortunate to go to Dragon Con before it became what it is now.
Before it jumped the shark.
Yeah.
And I've probably been to now that I do the math, it's probably like 35 cons. But most of those cons, I've been a con runner at rather than a con attendee. And that's one of the reasons why I love Wagon Con. And, you know, when I bring my con runner eye to it, they understand, they go overboard to understand what their limits are and to work within those limits. And when they push those limits, they're very careful and thoughtful about it. Not a lot of cons are. There's also the big point that every single member of their organizational board is walking around the entire time asking, hey, how are you? Are you having a good time? And I got to watch several times where someone said, no, I'm not. And rather than doing the, oh, that sucks, it was like, what can we do about that? How can we fix that? And that is something that doesn't happen at a lot of cons. That and what I consider my home con of the North back in Minneapolis to be, both had that vibe, and that's a vibe that's missing from a lot of cons, and that's why I love Wagon Con.
That exact vibe is something else that connects me back to further answering that question that you presented to me, Xander. I have attended cons as a member or a attendee, and I have been at cons as a guest, and I have worked at cons as a volunteer. Wagon Con is the only con where I feel that level of positivity and genuine interest from the staff so much that I attend either as a member or a guest or frequently both, and yet still go do what I can to make myself available to volunteer for them despite the money that I'm paying to be there. And despite all of that, like, I feel this desire to help out. It's not even an obligation. Like, I'm there. Sometimes they've paid for me to be there. Mm-hmm. But then when I'm there, I'm like, okay, cool. Put me to work. Mm-hmm. I want to do stuff. I'm going to help you tear down. I'm here. Make use of me.
And I will say too, on this podcast, I have a moral obligation to go and give a great shout out to Aaron.
Aaron.
That guy, the amount of what he did for everybody at the convention that just needed any little thing to be tweaked to make sure that their experience was better.
Right.
When we were setting up, he said, what do you need of me? I will do anything to make sure that your hammer crawl session is perfect.
Right.
Do you need tape because you need to put down wires? Do you need to go and have a bottle of water so you're not parched, so you don't pull a Marco Rubio? Like, what do you need? I will do it for you unequivocally. And he would just show up every 20 minutes and going, how are you doing now? Do you need anything now? Well, no. Yeah. Cool. I'll come back in 20 minutes to see if the answer is different.
Okay. Do you realize? Okay.
Go ahead. No. I cannot stop talking about how outstanding Aaron was as the guy who was the guy that made sure the convention ran smoothly with everything. Mm-hmm. And just how attentive he was, how much he gave a shit, and like just wanted to make sure that it was just everyone's best experience. I have never, in anything I've ever attended, con or otherwise, experienced a man or woman that was that attentive to just making sure that everything was perfect. So I wanted to make sure I give a huge shout out to Aaron and his awesomeness.
We actually had Aaron on as an interviewee in our last episode on the feed, which was me and Jacob interviewing random people who were passing by at GameStorm. So if you want to hear more from this mystery fellow, listen to that episode and he tells you more about the convention.
And, you know, Aaron is, for us, this year was kind of the shining example of that, because he was the one this year that was like constantly making sure we got what we needed to put on the show we were putting on. Do you realize how far away that hardware store was, by the way?
I don't.
Oh, you know, that was not, he described it as being like 3 blocks away.
That's what he said.
No, it was not 3 blocks away. It was like 8, 10. You know, it was, he did take the car and he did turn around, but there's that entire crew, whether they're members of the board or regular staff members, are just excellent. Halfling, who's on the board, she went through and helped a couple people who were coming for specific games and their scheduling got screwed up get into those games, made arrangements, made second sessions. You know, Buckley is running around being organizer extraordinaire. Even the volunteers are going like, oh yeah, no, I can be here 2 hours early tomorrow.
And what was really fun for me, too, is that for the second convention in a row, I ran into my old coworker, Josh, who was running games again at a convention.
He was fun to play with.
Yeah, we played Flux together.
Mm-hmm. And then he and I played Harbor after you went for Hammer Crawl.
And it was so much fun. And so just the fact that there is this Northwest gaming community of people that show up all the time. So when you make friends, you make friends. And they last for a long time. And they are there continuously through the next adventure that you take in a con.
And that right there, that sentence, there's a wonderful, wonderful description of why I love Wagon Con the most. Because that is the only con that I feel that I can consistently say that about. It is the con that keeps me coming back knowing, not even just like expecting, it's just more of a knowledge. Like, I'm going to go to this event and I'm going to leave probably tired, but also extremely fulfilled by the interactions with the people there. Now, we're going to close this segment out because we're running a little bit long here, but you did mention something called Hammer Crawl.
Hammer Crawl!
We were there to run a number of things, one of which was a live podcast recording for our sister podcast, the Hammer Crawl Podcast.
Hammer Crawl!
We recorded with a good 4 hour slot. We had a number of players rotate in. You can hear more on the Hammer Crawl Podcast, which is also on our network. But I do want to right now extend a personal thanks to Jacob as an amazing MC of that event, and Xander, who's now done sound on both of our live events of 2019. Thank you, guys. You were rocking it.
I will tell you that it takes every inch of me to not just want to say, fuck the sound and join into the game. Because it sounds like so much fun. So I was happy that I got to go and be a part of your
pre-game
non-recorded game.
Yeah.
Which was funny and hilarious and brutal. So thank you.
Thank you. And tell you what, let's drink some more. Okay, I'm empty.
All right, let me
give me
fix
something
you
else.
Let me practice my cubism.
MTC?
Yeah, I think I want to go back to the Crater Lake. Because I think I had the...
You had the Ezra.
Yeah, go back to the Crater Lake, and this time don't kill me, Jacob. I think you killed me last time. I've been reborn.
You know what?
If we have to call a wambulance, I understand.
I am not called Heavy Hand Engstrom for no riffing. There you go.
Oh, that is...
That's lighter than last time.
It's lighter than last time. That, I can work
that is going to be such a great thing to re-listen to.
Heavy Hand Engstrom.
No, that's not exactly what you said, and that's why it was great.
Okay. Awesome. You'll have to tell me later. What do you want me to pour for you, Xander?
Whatever you want.
Well, in that case.
Okay, hold on. Let's go get the vermouth and drink it dry.
I've made a huge mistake.
There are some vermouths worth drinking straight.
That's true. That's why I drank Nolly Pratt. Nolly Pratt, if you're looking to sponsor a podcast.
Speaking of things that are not going to sponsor our podcast, let's talk about drinking to the Dalles.
Jesus Christ.
You know, let's roll back on that for a moment. You know, the Dalles has got a small enough market that we might be able to hook a sponsorship there.
You know, we might. I think we probably have some positive connections with at least with the Sunshine Mill, which I must admit, thanks to Poppy, I've become something of not a wine snob, but I'm a wine drinker. I enjoy drinking and sipping wine.
And you are members of the club.
And we are members of the Sunshine Mill Winery. What I love about the Sunshine Mill is we go into town, we ride in, we walk in, they open at noon every day in the tasting room. We step in and they know us. They remember us. I'm like, oh, hey. And they call us by name. And then they serve us. They give us lots of different wines. Sometimes they'll be like, look, this isn't on the menu, but I just opened this personally.
Yep.
So here, have a glass of this. And usually the owner, who's been on television multiple times, will come out, be like, oh, hey, your glass is empty. Let me pour some of mine in there. Drink that. It's good. Mm-hmm. And you're like, why does this taste like happiness? He's like, that's why. I love that place. And I feel, and we had Spencer on.
Yep. Yep.
Spencer joined us last year at Wagon Con. So I do feel that I do not ever expect them to sponsor us, but they did give us a lot of booze for that event.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we have at least a good connection with them.
Yes.
And you could always acknowledge people that have treated you well. And there's nothing wrong with mentioning that people treat you well on a podcast.
Exactly.
Regardless of their financial contributions to the podcast itself.
Exactly. I think it's perfectly fine to talk about products that you enjoy, regardless or not of whether they give you stuff.
So I, too, like the Windy City.
And by Windy City, you mean the Windy City Restaurant and Lounge in the Dalles on, I think, what was second or third? It was second. It was second.
I don't remember.
That's the point.
Or third. Yeah. We're drinking.
So we did spend a fair amount of time visiting our local bars in the Dalles because we believe in patronizing these establishments in order to better understand whether or not they are good or bad.
Yes.
Did we have a conclusion? The bars that we visited.
Okay, I'm going to say something about Windy City. And I had this conversation with Aaron.
I think it's actually Windy River, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes.
Windy Riddy. Windy Riddy.
Let's call it Windy Riddy from now on.
Windy Riddy. Because I am now on what is probably my fourth, thanks to that extremely heavy pour.
By the heavy pour that I made, that you're actually probably on your fifth.
Okay, Jesus. Sweet Jesus.
Bottoms up.
Bottoms up.
Bottoms
Come
up.
Come on, bottoms up. Anyway.
Come on, fill them up.
You should check out our Trevona episode for the record. But yeah, so talking about Windy Riddy, we went there. Oh, God. So it is essentially the Dalles dive bar at this point.
100%.
Like, I don't think there's a bar, at least in the Dalles metro area, that could be considered more of a dive than Windy City Restaurant.
I can say for a fact there is one, but it is not as comfortable.
Well, we didn't go to that one.
Okay.
We went to Windy River.
That's
got
fine.
It right. And I love the staff there.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody that was working there was ridiculously nice, friendly, and personable. Even the cook, Yeah. Who doesn't give a shit about you.
Yep.
The cook is not supposed to interact with the people and doesn't actually care.
Mm-hmm.
The cook was cool and nice.
Yes.
And that made the place awesome.
By the way, Xander, when we rolled in there Friday afternoon, what was on the menu as the specialist?
The special was
corn dogs, right?
No. Bite the bullet, man.
It was a tuna casserole.
Tuna casserole. Did you have it?
No.
They cooked everything in front of you.
It seemed fine, but your special should never be a tuna casserole. I'm sorry.
Okay, first off,
choices were made.
Do people like tuna casserole?
No.
Yes and no for Jacob.
Okay. Well, I don't like tuna casserole, but I assume some people do.
Sure.
So why should that not be a special?
Okay. Anyway,
it's a stretch. Is what I will leave it at. However, so Jacob and I rolled.
You didn't have it.
Yeah, no.
We didn't. So you don't know if it was a good casserole.
It could have been great. It could have been like.
Sorry.
Perhaps.
It could have been like my mother's.
Exactly.
And my mother's is great.
And here's the deal. A lot of times with these small hole-in-the-wall places that you would never stop at.
That's the best fucking thing on the menu.
Someone who is known for that one thing.
Right.
Usually their mom.
Right.
Who makes it. And you're like, okay, oh my fucking God. Windy Rivers got the tuna casserole. And you do a Yui on the one-way street. And you park there and you eat it.
It could be.
I don't think it was, though.
No, I don't either. But so just Jacob and I roll in there and we're like, you know what? Here's a jukebox. Like there's no music playing.
Right.
It's just some sports show that's playing on low volume because no one has played the jukebox.
Right.
So
first off, I must note, it's not a jukebox. It's one of those
internet jukeboxes.
Internet things that can fucking play anything.
Play anything. It can play most.
It is not a Wurlitzer. It is not a Eureka. It's not any of the other greats.
No. But so we roll in, and this is one of those weird bars where it goes up and down like four stair levels, depending on where you are in the bar.
Yes.
You walk up a level of stairs to walk 2 feet to the restroom, to walk down a level of stairs to the main bar area, to walk up a level of stairs to the jukebox area, to walk down a level of stairs to the pool area where you can play billiards.
You want to know why that is?
I told Jacob that my guess was a field sobriety test.
That was called, where I'm from, that's called a Wisconsin field sobriety test.
That is because that is a historic building, and that is the second floor.
Oh,
most of the first floor of those buildings in the Dalles, you don't see because they built an entire new level of the city. The old city was one story lower.
Mm. Cool.
There's an underground area in the Dalles called the Under Dalles.
No,
they had to build it up because all of that kept flooding. So now most of that is basements and a strange interconnected series of tunnels.
Okay, so we're not playing D&D right now.
I'm not. This
however,
is
but Xander and I are mentally...
Dungeons and Dalles?
Yeah.
I have run convention games set in the Under Dalles.
That's so cool. Sorry.
And now Xander and I are mentally planning a trip to the Dalles for a little urban spelunking?
Absolutely.
Okay.
100%. That is going to happen now. So we might have had a few... Too many at the Windy River?
No. It was 3 beers, 3 shots. That's never too many.
Right. But we ended up hijacking the jukebox.
We did. Well, yes, we did.
And we threw on a lot of Tom Waits.
A lot of Tom Waits.
We threw on a lot of John Hyatt. We drunkenly went and serenaded the 4 other bar patrons with our jukebox selections.
Of which both the bartender and one of the pool players was very positively responsive to.
One of the pool players went and said, play that one song that goes like, you know, like when you're evil, whatever, you're evil, it's by something. And I went, you want me to play When You're Evil by Voltaire? Like the project artist, goth artist from 1998, that album, like that's what you want me to play? He's like, yeah. You're not going to have it on here. It's fine. I look it up. It's there.
I
fucking play it.
So you guys went the day before, and then we went again the next night.
Right.
And you, me, all of us plus Poppy ended up going to this place again. And I must say that I was disappointed. I thought the staff was pretty cool. I didn't have the food. The food was probably, you know, I think I had one of those corn dogs.
You sure did have some of my mini corn dogs. Mini corn dogs were good.
But I want to talk about the music. So I put a song in on the jukebox.
Oh.
And it didn't fucking play.
Yeah.
Because it was one of those internet jukeboxes, which meant that they could turn it on and off at any time. And then they brought in a DJ at exactly 9:30.
Yep. Oh, God. That was horrible.
And it was awful.
Yep.
That DJ, I don't know who you were, DJ shitty music. You should feel bad about yourself because all you played in the doubts, the doubts, right? Okay, this is the Gorge, Oregon. These are folk. And in a town with folk who frequent a bar like yours, you know, we're talking like these people professionally pick cherries. These people work. These are working class folk. These are folk. And you were playing booty rap. What the fuck?
Okay.
Like, it just started and it was just nothing but booty rap from 9:30 p.m. forward. And it's like, there is one person of color in this bar and they are actually queer.
And again, no one cared.
No one cared. No one was paying attention to their music.
No one was dancing. Yeah. No one thought this was the cool thing to do.
What the fuck?
I don't know why they did that.
Although, is a place where you should be playing Hank, and instead you're playing Drake. Like, what the fuck happened here?
Less Drake, more Hank. Less Drake, more Hank.
I'm just going to say that, you know, I think there might be some preconceptions going on there because, like, I spend a lot of time in what might be called white trash rural communities, drinking in white trash rural bars.
Oh, you're going to call me out for saying things, but you call people white trash here.
No, I call them like I am.
All right.
This neck is red. I have made no pretensions about that. The difference I saw with that DJ was the fact it was nothing but that.
There was no variation.
There was no variation in that
music.
You know, the thing is that especially in more rural parts of the country, you will walk into those dive bars and it will be booty rap, classic hip hop, and then modern country blended together.
This place didn't have a dance floor.
It didn't.
They brought in a DJ. a paid DJ to sit in the sound booth.
When he was setting up, do you remember how excited all of us were because we thought it was a karaoke DJ and we thought it was some massive karaoke.
But no, then it was just some dude setting up at a DJ at a sound booth in a dive bar in the Dalles with no dance
floor.
He
played his shit because he would walk away for like 20 minutes at a time.
Yeah. He wasn't even a real DJ.
He just
plugged in his iPod and played some fucking music.
So,
and it was all the same. It was all this, like, it was dance.
Right.
Dancey. What the fuck?
Long story short, great bar. Great, a surprisingly good, surprisingly cheap selection of alcohol.
Yeah. So again, to be fair, when we went in there, we said, "What's your top line whiskey?" And they go, "Okay, it's probably Bullet, and that's going to be $6.50. That's the most expensive whiskey we have here."
You know, that's a little bit subjective. Like, I like Jim Beam.
Jim Beam would have been fucking cheaper. That's the point.
I'm referencing your birthday there.
Yeah.
Shots fired. That's fine.
Yes. But anyway, so great bar. The DJ was a little rough that night, but overall, great vibe. I loved the other patrons. You know, it was a great experience.
Jim. I know you're not listening, but Jim.
And you and I never caught the name of the guy who was playing pool. But yes, awesome. I mean, it's just a great experience.
Yeah, and one more thing really quickly. I will tell you one of my favorite stories is that after the first night, Jacob had gone to bed. I had insomnia. I went back to the Windy River. And I show up there. And I'm in my battle jacket, which I'm not usually in.
This story.
I'm not usually in my battle jacket, but I have my battle jacket on. And one of the things that it says on my battle jacket is a patch that says, I'm a proud Mexican-American because I am. And this Chicano-looking guy next to me does the whole, like, you know, chest pump, like, you know, pounding his fist on his chest. Like, I recognize, like, yeah, we're like, you know, we're Chicano brethren. And I'm like, yeah, cool. So I do the same thing. And his girlfriend comes up and looks at me and goes, so do you like Hitler?
That's fucked up.
And the boyfriend looks at her and goes, do you not see his fucking patch on his coat that says he's half Mexican? Like, what is wrong with you? And she goes, oh my God, I'm so sorry. That was so rude. I'm like, also, that was fucking weird. And I couldn't even begin to explain that the patch underneath the I'm a proud Mexican-American patch was my grandfather, my Mexican grandfather's paratrooper regiment patch who fucking killed Nazis and fascists in Europe underneath. I couldn't even get to, I couldn't even get to the point to explain that to them of like how just wrong you were. Yeah. But it was
weird,
an amusing story from the Dalles.
And if you walk a few blocks from Windy River, you can also find another place that I found pretty exciting to drink at. I went there multiple times, similar to your experience with Windy River, was Route 30.
Yes.
Yeah. That place was so good.
Route 30 had 16 different beers on tap. Mm-hmm. And they made some pretty decent mixed drinks, including one that was like Huckleberry vodka and sweet tea. And it was amazing. Mm-hmm. And I kind of kicked myself for never having come up with that idea myself when I lived in the South.
By the way, I have a giant bottle of Huckleberry vodka.
Well, we got to make some sweet tea and bring that over for our next episode.
Also, I'll be your Huckleberry.
But anyway, they had
that's
really
being saved
good
for
food.
4th of July.
Really good food. Mm-hmm. I went 4 times over the weekend that we were there because they were basically a block away from the hotel. And 3 of those times I got, so, okay, let me start over. Whenever I go out of town and I eat at a restaurant, I usually look at the menu and find a thing on that menu that I can't, that is unusual, that is not like a standard, because I want to see
something you can't make.
I want to see, yeah, something either I can't make or that isn't on menus at most places here in Portland. And they had what they called a stromboli sandwich, and it was an unusual construction, and it was amazing. Like, and
I was having envy watching you eat it.
I'm of an age now where every meal that I get at a restaurant usually becomes 2 meals for takeout. I ate that whole goddamn sandwich and all those goddamn fries, and mm-hmm. they were amazing. Because, and then I did it 2 more times that weekend.
Plus, they had a very cool spot in there as well. Their decoration was on point. Mm-hmm. They clearly cared about their beer and draft selection.
Would you call their decor, say, rustic Americana?
No,
they
were trying to be a weird mixture of rustic Americana and steampunk.
Yes, yes, that's definitely it.
Because they had these weird, you know, gear-based lighting fixtures. They had a whole gear-based thing that was in the back behind their taps that they had like 8 interconnecting gears that would just move when you touched them.
Yeah, it was they had a good vibe in there. Yeah.
They had a really good vibe in there. And
did you know of the beer club?
They told
us. And if I live in the fucking Dalles, okay, if you live in the Dalles, join.
And you like beer.
And you like beer.
Or if you're like me and are in the Dalles, like,
often enough,
8 to 12 times a year.
That would also be worth it. It's not worth it for me personally because I don't live there, but
we'll fix
if
that.
If this was my neighborhood bar, I would do this in a heartbeat. They have a thing where they sell beautifully handcrafted glass, larger than 1 pint size.
They're steins,
yeah,
basically.
They're like 20 to like 26 ounce custom made glasses. And if you buy one and spend $100 on it, when you order a beer there, they give it to you at a super discount and fill whatever the fuck size your glass is.
And they set that stein up back on the wall and you mm-hmm. come in
and
you
it's
grab
yours.
It. Yeah. And at the end of the year, you take it home.
At the end of the year, take it home. And at the end of the year, too, they throw a party for everybody that has bought one and they just give you a shit ton of free beer. Last year, 5 people showed up. They sold over 100.
Right. Like, I'm I'm in and out of the
NPC's Dalles. Face right now is like,
that $100 buy-in to me is worth it just for the party.
Right.
Yeah, it is.
What like, I didn't know about the party. Like, I didn't hear that part.
To be honest, there's something to be said for all of the breakfast puppies. Like, you know, I will throw in more than $100 to make it so all five of the Bikers Dice and Bars hosts can go in. We'll drive out there. We'll pick out our glasses. We'll record it freaking live. You know, I will be out there to drink out of my glass. You guys will be out there for Sunshine Tavern. I'm sure if Xander had an excuse, we could make it happen. We need to make this happen.
Let's do it. We got it. We can make this happen.
Route 30. At some point, coming for you.
In the future, Route 30.
We're coming for you. We're coming for you.
This is the last call for alcohol this evening. Drink up, drink up, drink up, and order again. This is the last call for alcohol, get going. Drink up, drink up, drink up, then order again.
So Poppy could not join us today because she is in Japan right now.
Drinking a lot of sake, from what I hear.
From what I've understood, she is drinking a lot of sake.
A little bit of sake to me.
The consequences.
Hey, Pape, if you're listening to this, I know that some primo sake is after.
Was that Pake?
Pape.
Did you say, hey, Pake?
I said, well, okay. If that's the case, Poppy, bring me back Pokey, Pake, and sake.
Yeah, you do that. So Poppy is... currently, Poppy, I live with Poppy. Poppy is my wife, and our best friend just moved in with us as our housemate in this new house and studio where we are recording.
Does this house have a name?
It is the Crypt of the Pumpkin Queen is the name of it. And it is named after our cat, Pumpkin. Well, that's Poppy's cat. And Pumpkin's a sweetheart, and she's very vocal and very friendly.
Also but, still a cat.
But let me tell you something. So we had a bit of a scare yesterday. No, the day before.
Do you want to be recording this on mics?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, this is going to be amusing. So the other day, the day after Poppy left, no, the morning that Poppy left, that morning I get up and Pumpkin is just meowing. She's a very vocal cat, but she was specifically meowing because she missed Poppy. And me, Pumpkin's like, meow. She's just being exceptionally vocal that day. And she's coming and hanging out with me. And I took lots of pictures and videos because that's what phones are for. Videos and pictures of cats. Ugh. Later in the evening, I'm hanging out with our housemate. We're playing some video games. And I say, oh, shit. Where's Pumpkin? We haven't seen Pumpkin in hours. And oh, no.
Please tell me.
Pumpkin's an insight cat. Yeah, so
please tell me there's a happy end of the story.
We get to looking around the house. Okay, let's go look in the usual spots. Okay, Pumpkin's not under tree. She's not under any of the beds. She's not behind the furnace where she likes to hang out. She's not hiding out in that tower of moving boxes that we haven't unpacked. Oh, shit. Oh, shit. The cat got out. Oh, no. Oh, no. Oh, no. And I begin to freak out because the cat, well, you know, Poppy's in Japan and there's some... Anyway, I don't want to stress out Poppy.
Right. NPC, I'm getting stressed out by this story. I buried you. I don't want to bury
you. You are experiencing a fraction of the emotional turmoil that I experienced the other day when not being able to find this cat. And then...
So you didn't find the cat and it was a happy ending.
Because housemate
says, my bad.
Hey, I don't think your recliner had this lump in the rear. And he pokes it and it goes, and then a very unpleasant gray cat streaks across and runs downstairs. And the emotions that I was feeling at that moment were like, oh God, I'm so. Oh, God, the cat's alive. We found the cat. Oh, God, the cat's inside. The cat's alive. Now I'm going to go kill it.
That is correct.
Yes. Clink. Anyway, I understand you guys had an amusing story about a hotel room.
Oh,
music.
So after we talked a little bit about Windy River and our experiences having three great beers and three really cheap shots there. And then we went back to the hotel room. And then we went and picked up liquor. What did we pick up, Xander?
Well, we picked up two of the things that are above us right now. We had the Crater Lake Rye Whiskey. We had the Ezra Brooks Rye Whiskey. And we had the Skunk Brothers.
Skunk Brothers.
A distillery that is local-ish, I think, to the Dalles. Maybe
they are up in Washington, but not that far.
Yeah. They were having a tasting, and they had, I will admit, some not great, like cinnamon and apple flavored things.
Wasn't good. Wasn't good.
Crown apple? Crown apple?
Oh, okay, I'm going to let you state on this.
It wasn't great.
Okay, I would say that if you're going to do like apple pie moonshine, this was an abject failure.
It was.
Oh my God. My first and only experience with apple pie moonshine was I didn't realize I was drinking A, alcohol, or B, moonshine. I thought I was just drinking
Because you weren't!
I thought I was drinking apple juice at a convention. Let me tell you something, my friends. Apple pie.
Apple pie, when done right,
not even once. It fucked me up.
Apple pie, when made right, will fuck you up.
But anyways.
So we picked up a bottle of the Crater Lake Rye, the Ezra Brooks Straight Rye, and I picked up a bottle of the Skunk Brothers Moonshine.
Which actually was pretty good considering that it wasn't aged, and it made me really disappointed with the rest of their products that they had.
Yeah.
Because this was the best thing they had. All that to say this, though, is that just Jacob and I went back to our hotel room, which we were sharing together. We had a moment of country music enthusiasm.
Oh, yes.
Romance.
Yeah.
Is that the way to describe it?
Yeah, that would be a way to describe it.
And so he's like, hey, have you heard this Hank song? And I'm like, yeah. How about the Steve Earle song? And
he's like, this Hyatt song?
How about this John Hyatt song? And I'm like, girl, you talk in my language. I just want to swig more whiskey and sing this out loud to each other
which we proceeded to do.
And then at some point I'm like, hey, girl, you like
take your pants off. Wait, what?
Hey, girl, you like Nico Case? And he's like, hey, girl, who wronged you in your youth?
No. Who hurt you?
Yeah.
Who hurt you?
Yeah. So there was a lot of Nico Case going on. It was just like, oh, this is devastating. You clearly have a lot of child mental development issues.
I said no such thing.
In which you have not clearly gone and,
may have implied such things, but I did not say such things.
Gone through, and that's why you listen to Nico Case in order to go and drown your sorrows in woe and whiskey. And I said, yeah, girl, you get me.
I got a story about Nico Case. My first exposure to her was I was living in Atlanta and I was walking. It was in my early 20s. I was walking down the street in the little Five Points Inman Park area. And I walked past, I think it's called the Variety Playhouse. I was just kind of in my own head and I was really depressed that night and thinking some dark thoughts, but not like suicidal thoughts. Just like I was in a state of darkness.
Yeah.
And I saw this sign on the Variety that was like, free show tonight, Nico Case. It's like, I've never heard of this person. So I walked in.
What?
I was in my early 20s. This is before I became cool. And
roughly what year was this?
My age generally matches the year. So I think it was 23. So it's probably 2003 or 2004.
Okay. To be perfectly honest,
Continue.
2003, Nico Case was still not super well known.
So So anyway, I heard this haunting music flowing out and this kind of, nice angelic voice. And I went in and I sat in the back seat. And the first song that she starts playing after I walk in is a song called Furnace Room Lullaby.
Oh, God damn it. Oh,
and that is
and gentlemen, every muscle in Xander's body has gone stiff.
Oh,
I
God.
There are to inject him with something.
Maybe 40 people in the Variety Playhouse here on a weeknight. And I sit in the back of this large theater and I listen to this song. And it called to my soul. It pulled forth those dark recesses and it drew into being something in my brain that it's hard. I can't find words to describe how I felt after listening to that. But I then, at some point later, I went home on, no, it was that night. Napster was a thing. Not Napster, it was Kazaa or Morpheus.
I was going to say, it was not Napster. Napster was dead.
I was broke. So I went home and found one of those file sharing programs and acquired that song and sat down and put it on repeat and listened to it over and over in headphones in the dark. And that song is amazing. And dear listener, you should do this too sometime. So you will know that feeling.
So Furnace Room Lullaby, in addition to being a song that I could not comprehend a human being singing those notes at the end when she did.
Yeah.
Nathaniel and I saw Nico Case together once, and that was her final song that she played Furnace Room Lullaby, and we just stood there in awe as she belted out those notes. But it was also the inspiration for one of my favorite cocktails I ever created, in which I called the Furnace Room Lullaby.
Tell me more. I'm already interested.
The Furnace Room Lullaby, by and large, okay, the way that I created the cocktail is 2 ounces of a nice, solid bourbon, your Buffalo Trace, your cool Buffalo. It is an ounce of Frangelico. It is an ounce of St. Elizabeth Allspice Dram. A couple dashes of Angostura bitters put into a stirring vessel, served up, and then topped with like maybe like a 1/4 ounce of a really smoky scotch, your Lafroig 10, your Ardbeg 10, something like that. And I named that after that song because that's what it fucking reminded me of.
If I go to the Red Shed, can you make this?
Fuck yeah, I can.
Excellent.
That sounds amazing. And I think that we should make that our drink for a future episode.
Done.
Well, dear listener, thank you for joining us through our first episode back from our break.
We're back.
Woo-hoo! Woo! You've been listening again to Bikers, Dice, and Bars, recorded here in Portland, Oregon. We have Instagram. We have
Twitter.
Twitter. We have Discord.
We have Facebook.
Facebook. And now we have a hastily produced, but now very alive, Patreon page.
Patreon page.
Money.
If you feel so kind as to help us pay the bills, we would be very appreciative. Check out our Patreon page and check out our tip jar on our Pinecast host. All of these are linked in the show notes.
And I will just say, too, if you are one of our loyal listeners and you do live in the Portland metropolitan region, for $1 a month, we will be hosting quarterly events in which we will buy you your first drink.
If we get to a certain size.
If we get to a certain size.
So help us get there.
If you can get there, basically what that entails is that you contribute $1 a month, and then after every 3 months, we go and we buy you a drink at an event in which you get to hang out with us anyways.
Exactly. Probably in Portland.
Probably in Portland. We may reserve the right to say this quarter, we're going out to the Dalles and introducing you to a bar you should learn about.
Yes.
Or perhaps you're coming over to my new end of the world back out in Washington County or in one of my favorite road bars along the byways and highways of the motorcycle life in Clackamas, Washington, anywhere in the metro.
Anywhere in the area.
All we're saying is, though, for a simple $1 a month contribution, if we get to a certain amount, we can afford to go and get you all drinks.
Not only that, but you'll get to see the best dressed man you'll ever hear.
That is true.
But yeah, find us online. If you feel like kicking us a buck, we greatly appreciate it, but you don't have to because all of this is free on the interwebs. Once again, I'm NPC.
I'm just Jacob.
Dr. Xander Gerrymander.
And we wish to remind you,
always keep it rubber side down.
Always tip your bartender.
May your dice always roll criticals. And there's something about, don't drink and drive. That's bad.
Always drive responsibly.
Always drive responsibly and drink responsibly, too.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
Yes.
Because otherwise, you won't be able to be part of this podcast anymore.
Exactly. No. You know, drink responsibly so you can keep listening. Thanks, folks.
Thanks for joining us, friend. We've reached the end of Bikers, Dice, and Bars. Talking bicycles and motorbikes, gamer things and all the like. You can listen to it in your car. The Bikers, Dice, and Bars.